Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Healthcare Cost Containment Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Adam Gentleson. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Raquel, and thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I will not take very long. I just wanted to introduce myself and give you my contact information for follow-up. My number is 202-247-8614, and you can also follow up with Jason Rollin, who you probably have his email from the advisory that we sent out. But without further ado, to talk about this new report that's being released today by the Center for American Progress Action Fund and the Commonwealth Foundation, I want to introduce our speakers. We have David Cutler, who's a senior fellow here at CAPAF, also a Harvard economist and co-author of the report. We have Kathy Shane, who is a senior vice president at the Commonwealth Fund, and Christoph Stramikis, who is a senior research associate at Commonwealth and also a co-author of this report. So David and Kathy and Christoph will give short presentations, and then we'll open it up to your questions. David?
Okay. Thank you very much, Adam, and good early afternoon to people. I will be very brief, and I just want to talk a little bit about what we do in the report, what we conclude, and how we interpret it. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion about how the bills that are pending in Congress on healthcare reform will affect spending, both overall spending in the medical care system, as well as spending by the federal government and state governments and families and businesses. So we wanted to, and we did, analyze that. Our analysis differs from the analyses that are out there, particularly by the CBO and the Office of the Actuary, for reasons that I will return to in just a minute. But let me first describe what we do, which is we look at the impact of health reform on four dimensions of cost. The first one is the additional cost to the medical care system of covering people. That's different from the federal costs of covering people because the federal government is partly spending money so that people are having a hard time buying insurance now but still do buy it, can get additional help. So the net amount is smaller. There are estimates in the literature that help us to gauge how much people will spend who are now currently uninsured when they become uninsured. We use those conventional estimates. And the net increment to health spending from covering them is about $400 to $550 billion over the next 10 years. And that's a fairly common kind of estimate. Then there are three aspects of savings that we look at. The first one is traditional savings in public programs, things like reducing the Medicare Advantage overpayment and the productivity adjustment in the hospital and other industries. Those are, again, fairly standard. We take the CBO estimates, not that they've been always right in the past, but just that it's a big production to actually do those. So those estimates turn out to be savings of about $350 to $400 billion a year. Then there are two other kinds of savings which are most unique to what we do. The first is savings in administrative expenses of insurance associated with health insurance exchanges. The CBO has a little bit of that, but actually we think they've understated the amount of that. And again, I'll come back to why. And so there turn out to be savings of about $100 to $200 billion from that. And then last, the biggest source of savings is savings associated with modernizing the healthcare system. And that is the idea that healthcare can be made a normal industry, or at least not so bad an industry in terms of productivity growth. Current productivity growth in healthcare is about 0% a year. The average productivity growth in U.S. industry is about 2.5% a year. A number of studies suggest that what's feasible in healthcare is productivity growth in the next decade or two on the order of 1.5% a year. We use a number of 0.75% a year. So we're being very conservative, not relative to the historical numbers, but relative to what most analysts believe is possible. The net impact of that is a substantial reduction in medical spending. I should say that the Congressional Budget Office and the Office of the Actuary basically include zero savings for that, as for the insurance exchanges. When they do that, they find that the costs and benefits almost balance when you add it with slight changes either way. When you add in what we believe one can reasonably expect, the savings turn out to be on the order of $500 to $700 billion over the next decade. This turns out to be a reduction in the growth of spending from about currently 6.4% a year, which would be 6.6% a year if we add in people and didn't save any money, down to a reduction of about 6% a year in annual spending growth. Not a decline, not even a decline relative to GDP, but a much less rapid increase. It also would turn into a much bigger reduction in the federal budget deficit compared to the current estimates of about $100 billion a year savings over the next decade. Our estimates are using more reasonable assumptions, about $400 to $450 billion a year in reduced deficits, contributing to a federal budget balance. And the typical family would save about $2,000 on their premium, combined with additional savings in out-of-pocket spending, savings in taxes going to Medicare and Medicaid, and other kinds of programs would lead to a reduction of over $2,500 per family. Those are our central estimates, that is, national health spending declining by about 0.5% a year, or $500 to $700 billion, budgetary savings of $400 to $500 billion, approximately $2,000 to $2,500 savings per family. Why are these different than what you see? To put it fairly simply, what most of the analysts do is they say we want to look at essentially controlled trials. So we want to see what are the nature of the controlled trials that are out there. Well, most of the things that are being proposed, we don't have controlled trials. We don't have good comparison groups. We have never randomized any state of the country to try to be more productive in its healthcare. So in the absence of evidence, what most of the analysts do is they assume no impact. So that's one way of looking at the evidence. On the other hand, there's any number of studies that suggest that in the absence of evidence, zero is not the right estimate. So, for example, you have business scholars Michael Porter and Clay Christensen who write about how healthcare is so different from every other industry and the productivity data that and that it's so inefficient that they estimate huge savings potentials. You have doctors who talk about how mixed up the incentives are in their systems and how that drives things poorly. You have journalistic accounts about how higher quality care is lower cost care and how in many instances we could save money by improving the quality of care. And you have the evidence that in the past 20 years, essentially every time we have changed payment structures, doctors and other providers have responded enormously to that. So there's this gray area, not clinical trial literature, that shows enormous savings potential, as I mentioned, up to about 2 to 3% a year in terms of productivity growth. We take a much smaller amount and say that, look, if this doesn't work in healthcare, then healthcare will be the only industry in the entire economy where better incentives does not lead to better performance. That does not strike us as reasonable at all. So why we reached the results we did, and I will stop and turn it over to Kathy.
Thank you, David. I'm just going to emphasize a few of the points that David made in his summary of the report. First and foremost, the report finds that the bills that Congress is considering from both the Senate and House side make significant first steps toward bending the cost curve. The savings for families are real and substantial. By 2019, people would save on average families $2,000 in premiums, nearly $2,000 in premiums, and another $500 in out-of-pocket costs. In other words, with the insurance expansion combined with the pilots and demos and paying differently incentives, insured people would be spending less for insurance and getting better coverage. Both would be in place. And for families who are now insured through their employers, this would translate into a return to wage increases. We've been losing wage increases as employers who are providing health insurance seek to pay ever higher premiums. As employers save money on what they pay for health insurance. There will be more money on the table for wages. So these are significant. We think this provides a foundation, both the coverage reforms where exchanges will produce efficiencies in the insurance industry, lower overhead, nearer to what large employers already pay. Small employers would gain benefits from this, as would individuals. But that insurance foundation would allow us to really think about changing the incentives so we could start to bring down readmission rates, which vary enormously across the country, address infection rates in hospitals, provide incentives to improve our primary care system so people don't end up in the hospital for untreated diabetes and chronic diseases. There are first steps. We think there's a bigger potential for bending the cost curve, but we need to start now, and the bills, in fact, do so. Thank you.
Great. Thank you both. And Christoph, did you have anything to add, or should we just proceed into Q&A?
Adam, David, and Kathy touched on all the major points of our study. I just wanted to add one quick thing was we also looked at the impact of the bills on the Medicare program. And in the report, we found that Medicare cost growth is currently projected to increase about 6.6% over the next 10 years. I'm looking at the CBO estimate of what these bills would do to Medicare spending. We find that that would be decreased to about 5.3% over the next 10 years. When you add in these health systems modernization, these alternative health system modernization estimates that we came up with, Medicare spending is actually reduced to 4.6% over the next 10 years for a total savings to the Medicare program of about $576 billion. Just wanted to add that.
And I should emphasize that the numbers that Christoph has just given you are out of more efficient healthcare delivery, really incentives to avoid duplicative tests, avoid unnecessary drugs, but particularly worry about patient safety and readmission rates. Those are where the savings are coming from for the Medicare program and vulnerable elderly.
Great. Okay. Thank you for those additional points. Raquel, I think at this time we'd like to open it up to questions from members of the media.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Your first question comes from Robert Samuelson with Newsweek.
Can you give us projections of what national health spending would be absent any legislation, then the projection, what it would be, I mean, in 2019, what it would be under either the CBO or the CMS actuary estimate of the bill, and then what it would be under your estimate? And similarly, do you have projections on the very toward the end of the report where you have the projected savings of around $2,500 per family? That's from what it would have been. And I'm wondering whether or not you have estimates as to what the health care costs would be as a percentage of family income before and after your estimates.
Thanks, Bob. Let me just call your attention to a few things that deal with those. The first is there's Exhibit 3 on page 6 of the report, which has the forecast of national health expenditures under the different scenarios. And the current projection is $4.7 trillion in 2019. We project that that'll be $4.5 trillion under the coverage and savings reforms. That is, on the one hand, $200 billion is a lot of money. On the other hand, it's clearly not stabilizing the spending as a share of GDP. My belief, and this comes up in work that other work I did for the Center for American Progress with Judy Fader, is that what you see is over time more of a stabilization. That is, it takes some time for reforms to start to work. And so in the first decade, what you get is the down payment, and then beyond that, you get much more.
These are absolute numbers. They're not percentage of GDP.
Those are absolute numbers.
These are trillions of dollars.
Right.
We could. I don't have offhand what percentage of GDP it would be, but we can get that.
Okay.
Similarly, the premium increase is shown in Exhibit 6. And
right. But again,
so that shows what premiums would have been. Now, again, you need to divide this by average family income, and I don't have that handy, although it's easy enough to calculate. And we can get that to you.
Okay, great.
And the Medicare, and I think you asked about Medicare also, and we show that in Exhibit 5. Medicare is projected to be on its way to $797 billion, and with reforms, it would be $659. So we're showing you the end year in 2019, and that's in billions of dollars.
Right, and this includes the reductions in the bills based on the modification of the annual adjustment. Is that right? In other words,
yeah.
The second
yeah.
figure, the
That's
middle
right.
figure is what's in the bills, and then the lowest figure is with your additional savings.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct.
The only thing we took out was the class program, which is just a different kind of animal.
Okay.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Raquel. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. And thank you to our speakers. I just want to quickly say that everybody who's been in touch with myself or Jason from CAP or anybody from Commonwealth will be receiving the full version of the report momentarily. If you haven't been in touch with us, just shoot me an email at ajentleson, AJENTLESON, like gentle son, but with a J, at AmericanProgressAction.org. And my phone number is 202-247-8614. So with that, we'll wrap up. Thanks again, and I'll speak to you all soon.
Thank you, everyone.